North Korea does have the capability to wage this kind of massive-scale cyber attack.
North Korea now suspected of a massive cyber attack. It's Wednesday, May 17th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us online at VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, opinions differ on the new U.S.-China trade deal. India opts out of Beijing's Belt and Road plan. Salafism comes into Indonesia. And a computer tablet for physical therapy. We get moving right now with today's VOA Asia. Media reports say that new South Korean President Moon Jae-in will visit the White House next month to discuss tensions with North Korea over its nuclear and missile programs. The announcement followed Sunday's latest ballistic missile test into the Sea of Japan that Pyongyang said involved a rocket capable of carrying a heavy nuclear warhead. In a unanimous statement Monday, the UN Security Council condemned the launch and warned of further sanctions. The North is also suspected by some security experts of being behind the, quote, WannaCry global cyber attack that crippled hundreds of thousands of computers since Friday. Cyber analysts said they found technical evidence that could link the North to the ransomware attack. Eric Chin with the California-based software security firm Symantec said some code in WannaCry software has appeared in programs used by the Lazarus Group, believed to be a North Korea-run hacking operation.
Lazarus has been on our radar for some time. They first came onto our radar when the Sony attack happened. They basically broke into Sony's networks and overwrote all of their files, bringing down their whole computing infrastructure. They also did a massive, what we call, wiping attack on the South Korean broadcasters and also South Korean banks. And then most recently, they had been pinned against the attacks in Bangladesh, on the Bank of Bangladesh, where they tried to transfer $1 billion. They made some typos and successfully transferred out $81 million. The Sony attacks were attributed to North Korea by the U.S. government, and the South Korean government attributed their wiping attacks to the North Koreans as well.
However, he cautioned these indicators are not enough to definitely say it is Lazarus. But Tufts University Korea analyst Sung Yun Lee tells VOA's Victor Beatty it wouldn't surprise him.
We tend to patronize North Korea, look down on North Korea because they are so poor and backward. Yet they have shown the world that they are a nuclear power, that North Korea now has intermediate range ballistic missiles with which it could target U.S. bases in Guam and perhaps even further, reaching Hawaii or Alaska. North Korea, we know, has successfully waged a cyber attack, a massive cyber hacking job against a major movie studio in the United States in 2014, Sony Pictures Entertainment, which caused probably hundreds of millions of dollars of damage, kinetic damage, in addition to various other damage, embarrassment for the company and many famous Hollywood actors, and also exercising censorship against the United States. So yes, North Korea does have the capability to wage this kind of massive-scale cyber attack throughout the world. We know that North Korea also is perhaps the only country in the modern era, in the modern world, that has successfully stolen millions of dollars, $8.1 million, as North Korea did, through a cyber bank heist against Bangladeshi accounts held in the New York Federal Reserve Bank. So yes, North Korea has a need to show the world its asymmetric capabilities.
Meanwhile, the UN Security Council Monday again condemned the North's recent ballistic missile tests. The U.S. UN ambassador on Sunday suggested that the UN has more tools in its toolkit with regard to sanctions. Do they?
They do, because, you know, sanctions sound like a magic bullet, a silver bullet, a magic wand. If you enforce sanctions, implement sanctions, then c'est la vie, that everything changes, the target, the regime becomes a democracy. It doesn't work that way, of course. So there's also the view, pretty pervasive out there, that sanctions rarely, if ever, work. But sanctions, like any domestic authorities or laws, need to be enforced. It takes time. It takes a lot of manpower, a lot of effort to enforce sanctions.
Sung Yoon Lee said none of the seven major Security Council resolutions on sanctions against Pyongyang have ever been strictly enforced. Ironically, said Simon Choi of the South Korean-based internet security firm Huawei, North Korea appears to have stepped up its cyber attacks as a way of getting hard foreign currency in the face of those U.S. sanctions. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOANews.com. UN Security Council rips North Korea missile test, threatens new sanctions. North Korea becomes usual suspect in WannaCry cyber attack. India skips China Belt and Road Summit amid concerns. U.S.-China trade deal brings mixed reaction. Amnesty warns attacks on human rights activists at a crisis point. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. The new U.S.-China trade deal, which includes 10 initial agreements on agriculture trade, financial services, investment, and energy, is drawing mixed reviews. The agreement is being panned by some as a poor deal for the United States that does not address fundamental issues concerning the Chinese market. But others say the agreement represents incremental progress. Robert Atkinson, president of the Information Technology and Innovation Foundation, argued the deal has failed to address issues facing advanced industries that are critical to the U.S. economic future. Derek Scissors, a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, argues that the deal by itself means almost nothing, since the increase in market access that China now promises has been promised before. Agreeing that it isn't a major deal, Christopher Balding, a professor at Peking University, HSBC Business School, says the agreement is a step forward for the Trump administration. Balding tells VOA, disagreeing that the President Trump got played or outmaneuvered.
If the agreement is actually implemented, it would represent, I think, a solid step forward for U.S. market access to China. And it needs to be viewed in that context of, was one step, you know, further than where we were before.
Balding agreed China has employed what others called a delay and diversion strategy and waited for years to honor its commitments, some of which dated back to China's accession to the World Trade Organization in 2000. As an advanced economy, he says the United States does not have a lot of leverage over China to open its market. However, China now appears to respond to embarrassment, triggered by Trump's earlier angry tweets, which Professor Balding says may provide some unconventional leverage in pushing China.
The Trump administration keeps up public pressure on China. I do think it would be very likely that you could see additional incremental progress in various specific markets or industries.
While it's urgent for the United States to demand full market access in China, C.Y. Huang, a partner of FCC Partners, warns U.S. companies are losing their edge in competing with their fast-growing Chinese rivals.
He says China is no longer afraid of opening up its market and competition from the United States.
Many U.S. companies can hardly compete with their Chinese counterparts in China. U.S. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross says China will open its market to U.S. beef by mid-July, while in return the United States will issue a proposed rule to allow Chinese cooked poultry to enter U.S. markets by the same deadline. Beijing will also allow U.S.-owned firms in China to provide credit rating and electronic payment services, the latter of which is already dominated by China's UnionPay. Ross said the deal, part of the 100-day plan after the meeting between U.S. President Donald Trump and Chinese President Xi Jinping last month, aims to reduce the U.S. trade deficit with China, which reached $347 billion last year. Our thanks to correspondent Joyce Huang in Beijing for bringing us this story. Happening now in Asia, a local court says a pregnant 10-year-old girl in northern India will be allowed to have a late-term abortion. The girl is about 5 months pregnant and reports being repeatedly raped by her stepfather. Indian law does not permit abortions after 20 weeks
unless doctors say the mother's life is at risk. Stay up to date with VOA Asia. We're happy to have you with us today on VOA Asia. India skipped China's just-concluded Belt and Road Summit, citing concerns that the project runs through disputed Kashmir. Analysts say New Delhi is deeply concerned about the strategic implications of an initiative that would dramatically increase Beijing's presence in neighboring countries. But questions have also been raised about whether New Delhi risks being isolated by staying out. India's criticism of a project, which Chinese President Xi Jinping has called the project of the century, was unequivocal. An Indian Foreign Ministry spokesman pointed out the flagship initiative of the Belt and Road Project passes through Pakistani Kashmir, a territory that India claims. Jayadeva Ranade, a China specialist formerly on the government's National Security Advisory Board, says China's assertions that it does not want to get involved in the territorial dispute between the two countries has meant little to India, which believes endorsing a project spearheaded by a close ally of Pakistan would mean endorsing its arch-rival's claims on the Himalayan region.
Now, by making these investments, it's obviously, as we say, put its feet on the ground and back Pakistan.
Beijing has been keen to involve India, which straddles one of the world's busiest shipping lanes in the Indian Ocean. China's ambassador to India told an Indian military think tank recently that the Belt and Road Initiative was good for both countries and fits into India's Look East policy of strengthening ties with Southeast and Northeast Asia. But that comment did little to allay India's mistrust of its giant neighbor, which has had border disputes lingering for more than five decades after they fought a brief war, and with whom New Delhi's ties have plummeted in the past year. China says its initiative, an ambitious multi-billion-dollar project to build a transport network spanning 65 countries, is a new way to boost global development. Many in India, however, believe that in addition to economics, the initiative is part of China's expansionist policies designed to extend its economics, military, and diplomatic clout across Asia, up to Europe, and beyond. Drawn by the prospect of massive infrastructure building and huge investments that could lift their economies, Bangladesh, Nepal, and Sri Lanka, Afghanistan, and Myanmar have joined the project. Sri Lanka and Nepal were represented at the summit, and these countries have signed preliminary agreements for several infrastructure and power projects. Chintamani Mahapatra is a professor at the School of International Studies at New Delhi's Jawaharlal Nehru University, and he calls the One Belt, One Road, or OBOR, initiative a new kind of colonization.
The OBOR project is very clearly a Chinese initiative promoted by China with a strategic goal, and simply because China has a lot of funding. Now, when multiple countries are involved in a huge project like this, it should not be proposed, funded by only one country.
China says over 100 countries around the world and international organizations are involved in the initiative, which it says has gotten a warm response from the international community. Some analysts caution India on missing out on an ambitious initiative that aims to integrate Asia with Europe through a network of rail lines and ports to create new trade corridors. Jayadeva Ranade says India is not shutting the door on its participation completely on a project whose contours are still to take shape.
It's a possibility provided there is something worked out with regard to the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor. But the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor is a problem unless China does something to mitigate our concerns there.
For the time being, India's answer is to step up on infrastructure projects it has planned in neighboring countries, although these cannot match the scale and size of Chinese investments. We thank Anjana Pasricha in New Delhi for gathering this story. For us, you're listening to VOA Asia.
News happens around the clock. And VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
This news alert from VOA Asia, although uninhabited and far from civilization in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, Henderson Island is strewn with almost 38 million pieces of plastic waste. Researchers from the University of Tasmania say that's the highest density of plastic debris ever recorded. You can find the story on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We continue now with VOA Asia. Salafism is a fundamentalist movement that originated in Saudi Arabia. It extols the norms of early 8th century Islam and rejects modern cultural innovations. It discourages political action or extremism, but rise of Salafi conservatism has caused frictions in diverse and tolerant Indonesia. Reporter Krithika Varagur spoke with VOA Steve Miller from Jakarta and discussed how the conservative movement was manifesting in the country suburbs.
Salafism has been growing in Indonesia since the 1980s, particularly in middle-class professional suburbs like the ones surrounding Jakarta. And some of it is due to Saudi funding, such as mosques and preachers, and some of it is due to Salafi media, which is quite accomplished in distributing its message. And one of the leading Salafi media sources is called Radio Roja, which is a radio station in the province of Bogor, which is just outside of Jakarta, which reaches listeners all across the country.
What kind of programming does this radio station have?
Most of it is pretty cut and dry. Quran recitations, Arabic lessons, and lifestyle lectures and so forth. But a distinguishing feature of Salafi media is da'wah, which is proselytizing, and that often takes a quite hardline stance on conduct such as women's roles in society and the treatment of religious minorities and so forth. So when you look at the da'wah preached on Salafi radio stations like Roja, it can be quite fundamentalist. And sometimes, you know, even hardline.
What kind of reach do these radio stations and even TV stations have across the nation?
Well, the internet has really been a game changer. Radio Roja already had the most listeners in Indonesia when it was among the Salafi stations when it was founded in 2005 and became an AM radio station in 2007. But with the internet over the past 3-4 years, they actually stream across the whole world. So anyone who speaks Bahasa Indonesia or wants to listen to Arabic can tune in.
Now, if we take a look at the effects that these radio stations, these TV stations, the Salafi movement in general, what kind of impact have they had on Indonesia?
The freedom of expression that came with the transition to a full democracy also unleashed some, you know, gave freedom to rather conservative, hardline voices that were suppressed previously. So there is a big rise in right-wing parties, as evidenced very vividly by the enormous hardline rallies in Jakarta this past year. And there has also been a small, although still minority, strain of Salafi jihadists, violent jihadists, like in eastern Indonesia, where the Laskar Jihad group was an armed Salafi jihadist militancy. And more recently, Salafi channels have become a breeding ground or entry point for a lot of Islamic State sympathizers.
Krithika Varagur says despite the overlapping viewpoints of conservative political organizations and more violent groups, there's no direct causation or correlation with regard to Salafism media and the rise of conservatism in the country. Developing at this hour in Asia, cybersecurity experts consider North Korea a suspect in global ransomware cyber attack. Pyongyang has the advanced cyber capabilities and motive to compensate for lost revenue due to economic sanctions, but experts admit the technical evidence is somewhat tenuous. Follow the story on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, cybersecurity experts warn that hundreds of thousands of computer users across the globe remain vulnerable following that large-scale virus attack in recent days. The so-called ransomware virus struck governments and companies around the world, as Henry Ridgewell tells us from London.
Britain's National Health Service was one of the biggest organizations to be hit. Even urgent treatments were delayed and patients felt the impact.
They can't do the operation.
Yeah, they can't do the operation
because all the computers are down.
The computers are down.
So and what they're doing is disgusting.
The virus targets computers running outdated Microsoft Windows XP software, says James Tedman of cybersecurity risk advisors ACA Aponics.
It's still present in a large number of organisations, a large number of homes across the globe. In fact, whilst the number of Windows XP machines in the US is only 2%, if we look at regions such as Africa and Asia, the numbers are much higher. In Africa, I believe they're up to around 11% of machines.
Russia's interior ministry was badly affected, while in France, production was halted at a Renault car factory. In Japan, technology giant Hitachi and carmaker Nissan were hit. Across the globe, thousands of individuals also appear to have been affected by the virus, a type of ransomware called WannaCry. The virus locks users' files and demands $300 to have them released.
This is analogous to the burglar coming in going, I can't see any worth here to myself to sell on, but actually what I can do is I can put all these knickknacks and personal photos in a box, put a strong padlock on it, and actually that means that when the person comes home, they're going to see that all your items in a box, padlocked up, with a note, pay the ransom and I'll unlock the box for you.
The spread of the virus appears to have been halted after a British cybersecurity expert managed to inadvertently trigger a so-called kill switch. The expert advice, update your software and target the weakest link, the users.
Make sure they understand how these viruses get in the system, be it browsing, you know, poorly chosen sites or opening spam emails and virus emails.
The financial cost of ransomware is huge and growing every year.
The FBI have described it as the largest crime wave in modern history. It was a $1 billion industry last year. So this is really, really big business, very unlikely to be going away anytime soon. And in fact, the likelihood is it's only going to get worse.
Experts warn the stereotype of a lone teenager hacker has been replaced by sophisticated criminal gangs targeting millions of users. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Victims of stroke often face years of grueling physical therapy if they can even find a qualified therapist. Now a Portuguese inventor has created a computer program that delivers high-quality monitored therapy, and it's just a mouse click away. Faith Lapidus narrates the promising news in this report from Kevin Enix.
Alvaro is a stroke victim who is relearning how to walk, and he has constant access to high-quality therapy just by turning on his computer.
We developed a digital therapist that basically works like a human therapist will provide feedback to the patient. So we start by analyzing, digitizing the motion of the patient, which is what we use as a reference for a normal movement. So we start with that. And after that, we feed that motion to a tablet where our digital therapist provides feedback to the patient.
It's called SWORD, an acronym for Stroke Wearable Operative Rehabilitation Device. And it works through the use of sensitive motion detectors that patients strap to their body. A tablet program then runs them through rehab exercises and charts their progress.
Between the exercises, there's always a small break that allows recuperation, and it has incentives. At the end of each exercise, the results appear. How many times I did the movements, how many medals I won. There is virtual compensation if you do the exercises well. It's kind of fun and ends up being a bit of a game as well.
Start.
The developers say it helps solve the problem of a lack of qualified therapists and allows easy access to therapy at any time. The Portuguese developer is working on a U.S. version of the product and is preparing to launch SWORD in the U.S. market. For writer Kevin Enox, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
And while we run off to do our exercises, we thank you for listening to VOA Asia. You can get our program in many different ways, including iTunes and SoundCloud. And we invite you to write to us. The best way? Check out our VOA Asia Facebook page and send us a message there. You can also email us at voaasia@voanews.com. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Jim Harmon, managing editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team includes Ali Ogden and David Bird. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a great day.